Bandwidth for Vagary.tv podcast provided by CashFly at CashFly.com. That's CacheFly.com.
Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 151.
Get me some Bacardi.
Yeah, we get drunk off this one. Quickly, too.
I am too drunk. Paul, you could just get drunk off the fumes from our podcast.
Probably. You just stand next to Jeff and you get a contact on. Yeah.
Contact drunk.
I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
If I make it through this podcast, I'll be impressed.
And Jeff?
I have an announcement to make.
Jeff has an announcement. Walter Lopez also has an announcement to make, and he is here with us.
I want to hear Jeff's announcement.
Yeah. Oh, I am drinking a 90-minute IPA, and it's going to be really yummy.
Is it delicious? Do you think?
Yeah, although I will say that it doesn't even compare to 120 minute.
Yeah.
And I actually like Gumball Head more than the 90 minute, which is weird.
Wait, what do you like more than? Oh, Gumball.
That beer is so tasty, dude. Oh my god.
It's a wheat beer, right?
Yes, yeah.
What's the flavor profile?
Dude, you're talking to the wrong person. Better than
Miller Lite.
Damn
it, Jeff. It tastes a little better than cigarettes and just slightly better than coffee. That's what Jeff's fucking palate is.
It has kind of a sweet flavor to it. I don't know. It kind of tastes like an IPA, even though I guess it's not. But definitely without the bitter edge that an IPA kind of has. And I think it...
Oh, shit.
It has, like, 90-minute IPA, for whatever reason, to me, has a kind of a boozy aftertaste, which, strangely, the strong...
Have you been fucking reviewing on Yelp? You sound fucking professional.
Tony, like, he'll tell you the whole flavor profile. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know the difference between hops and whatever. Like, it tastes good, okay, but
yeah.
I know how to hop.
Yeah.
That's true. From your career as a frog.
I saw a girl hop once.
Okay. Well, you don't say that. As you probably noticed, Amanda is not here with us. She has left us to go focus on other things and to dye her hair pink.
That's important.
She's still a friend of the show, though.
She was kind of a loner anyway. Her other podcast started up like right after we.
Yeah, and she had said beforehand that she didn't stick around until that happened, and she's like, "Ah, fuck, well, there we go."
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about some games.
Let's do it.
I beat Fuse.
Woo!
Game's alright.
I give you a gold star for playing another crappy game.
I want to see that on the box. The game's alright.
It's alright.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as far as Insomniac games go, it's kind of disappointing, but it's just a generic shooter. Doesn't really have a whole lot of personality. I'm not really sure what happened in the game. But when you play it with other people, it's kind of fun. Some friends came over Friday night. We sat down. We played through a bunch of it. And blowing shit up with friends, always a good time. But that doesn't have to be Fuse. That could be any game. So take that with a grain of salt, I guess. Yeah, that's all. It suffers from some really shitty design, where it's just these long, protracted boss battles, and like the last level itself, last chapter of the game is just throwing you into these ridiculous shooting galleries, where the snipers are picking you off, and Then you have to fight these giant behemoth guys, and they just keep throwing them one after the other, and it kind of gets really dull. And the final boss battle was really, really unfun. So, but overall, it's okay. It's all right.
Sign me up to not play that.
Yeah, I mean it's purely skippable. especially since we're gonna get to some games that came out this week that are way better than that. So, yeah. But Tony, you've been playing Crusader Kings 2 expansion pack.
The Old Gods expansion came out last week. The core game starts in 1066. This rolled the year back to, like 800 something. So you could play as the Vikings. So really cool. You can like assemble your Viking raiders and take them off to provinces and like loot and pillage. And the game does everything it can to encourage you to do that. You can sack cities and, like take famous women or famous men's wives as your concubines. A lot of cool like Viking-ish stuff. You can also take people prisoner and sacrifice them to your gods. So lots of cool stuff like that happens in the game. The Crusader Kings games have focused on like your role as a leader of a nation, you as a king or duke or whatever. This option actually adds landless adventurers to the game, so you could actually play as someone who's not the leader of something, and you can like declare your intention to take over a province or add it to like your own empire, and people will like flock to your banners, like random people looking for glory or booty or whatever will like join your crusade. So the expansion completely changes the gameplay, and this is like the third or fourth expansion to the game that went ahead and like turned the whole formula on its head. So I've actually never seen a game have four separate DLC packs, each of which took the original formula of the game but utterly changed it in a way that made the game feel completely fresh and completely new. And this is probably the best pack, in addition to having that new, fresh feeling, it gives you 200 more years to play around with, which is really cool. So, great expansion. If you like your Crusader Kings 2, this is a must-buy.
Sounds like freaking complicated. Sounds like you're investing
it's
a lot
actually,
more.
It's actually, in terms of complexity, it's probably one of the more understandable Paradox games. It's pretty easy to play once you get the fundamentals under your belt. That would take a couple hours, so it's not something you're just going to sit down and say, "Oh, I can play this."
Right.
And once you actually get into a campaign, the time commitment is rather intense. To get all the way to the end, it's going to take hours and hours and hours. So, it's definitely not for the person who just wants to sit down and have, you know, 20 minutes of Viking killing to satisfy them through the day. So that's not going to help you.
Right. Cool.
Yep. I zoned out completely while you were talking about that.
Damn you! It's a good game. It's like one of the two best games that came out last year. That and XCOM.
You see, XCOM, I understood. When you start talking about, like, Crusader Kings and...
The difference between those two games is that XCOM you can hop into, it has a really easy to understand and fun tutorial, and at the end of the tutorial you know absolutely everything you need to know to play the game. Crusader Kings 2 has an utterly obtuse tutorial that won't help you at all and will still require you to read through the manual and figure out what you're supposed to do here and there. But the games are like on par in terms of quality once you actually figure out what's going on.
I'm sure it's not for me. I know that. I avoid it. but I know that there are lots of people out there that enjoy that stuff. So, let's see, Walter, you play a little bit of Marvel Heroes. I don't want to hear about that because I heard it's like Diablo with superheroes.
That's basically it. It's a free to play formula, so anyone can grab it now. if you want like some of the more popular characters, you're gonna have to like shell out some money, you know?
Okay.
So I can play as Aquaman right now, is what you're telling me.
No, that's DC.
Yeah, you play as Namor.
Fuck.
Yeah, you get, well, I don't think he's in the game right now, but if you wanted to play, like, let's say Captain America or, like, Iron Man, they're, like, the top tier guys. You can spend a little bit of more money on them.
So basically, I can play as someone I've never heard of before. Great.
No, because you still get, the first free few are, like, the Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye. They're not Daredevil. You know, they're not guys that are, like...
Second tier dudes.
Yeah, they're not marquee people. They're not the Iron Man.
So I can be Jeremy Ritter is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, you could. You can buy costumes for each one too. So if you want to look just like him from the movie, you can buy his costume. And you just run around in the, you know, typical dungeon crawler, beating the crap out of people with like, remember X-Men Legends? It's basically that, because you can jump in like a party of four friends and go and quest away, or you can just do it by yourself, and if you go into a dungeon, they automatically pairs you whoever's in there, and you guys can team up to take out the villain. Within the first chapter, I took out the Shocker, which sounds like a sex move. Actually, it is a sex move, but kids shouldn't try that unless you're old enough. It's just stuff like that. So if you're like a comic book fan, it's kind of fun because you not only are you crawling around and doing stuff like as a ranger, as a brawler, whatever, you're actually doing it as a character you recognize, you know? And as you level up, you unlock the skill tree. And for instance, Hawkeye has like multiple arrows, or like a shock arrow, a freeze arrow, you know, and little things like that. It's surprisingly well put together. Because whenever free to play comes around, I automatically think like, you know, super basic gameplay, repeat, repeat, repeat. Spend your money if you really want to open up like, you know, proper things. But so far, it looks like that's not the case for this, and that's kind of cool, you know.
Avengers for $85 on Steam.
You can get what?
The Avengers. You can get all of them unlocked for $85 on Steam.
There's a lot of Avengers, though.
Yeah. And they're probably...
This just includes four. You get Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk, and Ms. Marvel.
And a bunch of gear, too. A bunch of rare drops and stuff like that. It's one of those games where, you know, I don't know, it's, you know, dungeon crawlers, you can spend as much as you want time in there just, you know, playing around and stuff. So, I think it has potential. It's interesting to see the free-to-play formula kind of get wrapped around this, you know?
Right.
And the license sure is big enough, that's for damn sure. And there's like certain moments that kind of seem to work. So, I was in an open area in Hell's Kitchen, which is like the Daredevil's like, you know, playground. And, the Shocker was just running around. You get a notice, and you know, and it tells you where he is on a map. You go in there and fight him, and there was like 20, 30 characters facing off against him. And then it drops when you beat him, it drops a bunch of loot everywhere, and you go around and you pick up stuff. You know, it kind of makes you feel like you're not empty. You're just running around a dungeon by yourself. You know, so right. In that sense, it's kind of interesting. I think long term it might see success. I don't think there's any particular game right now on top of like a AAA title that's like huge. You know, like The Last of Us is going to see giant success because everyone's kind of like holding their breath because, you know, the next gen is being announced in a matter of days. You know?
Right.
So like, typically that means sales drop for whatever's coming out, you know?
It could be interesting. I'm going to give it a shot. I'm not buying any of these characters, so jeez.
The ones that are free are plenty enough. Like, and there's like, I was playing the game and I unlocked it. I did a mission and they gave me a character for free that you're supposed to pay for.
Okay,
I guess
you can get stuff like that.
Yeah, there's random drops and once in a while you have like this thing to unlock a character. They gave me Storm, so I can play a Storm now. You know,
this DLC that Tony just talked about. The Avengers pack for $85 comes mm-hmm. with four heroes.
Seems rather pricey to me.
Four heroes, eight costumes, and 10 fortune cards. I'm not sure what that is, but
that's just kind of like gives you more chances to get rare drops and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's basically a starter pack. So not only do you get like you know the more famous characters, you get everything and that speed your process in the game, so you can park faster.
Yeah, it's like the $80 Marvel Knights pack comes with Spider-Man, Wolverine, Punisher, and Black Panther.
Yeah.
And then some, yeah, like, costumes for them. And yeah, so that's cool. Maybe I'll try that out.
It's interesting formula. I mean, I've already seen some of the top-tier characters running around, so kids are going to spend money on it. It's just reality of it, you know?
Right. Yeah, I might give that a shot. Download it right now.
Yeah, Steam.
Yeah.
Make it too easy.
Hey, they really do. That's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
Some other stuff that came out this week. Remember Me came out on Tuesday. I played a little bit of that, a couple hours. That game is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got a great design. I like the look of it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's takes place in what they're calling Neo Paris. It's like 80 years in the future, 70 years in the future. The premise is that there's this company that kind of trades on memories. That's kind of the currency that's going on now, is memories. Like, there are, in the poor sections, there are sections where you can go up and you can trade a memory for cash. So it's like now, like, there's cash for gold stuff on the side of the streets. Like,
mm-hmm,
in this world, there's cash for memories. So you go up and they extract your memory and they give you some money. And that, there's this kind of class divide between, you know, the rich and the poor. The rich obviously can afford to keep their memories and buy new ones, buy new experiences, where the poor, you know, they're kind of selling off their mind. And at some point it makes them into these kind of zombie-like creatures that kind of infest the really low rungs. So there's this really kind of interesting social commentary going on. The combat is pretty cool. It's all hand-to-hand. No gunplay. You build your own combos, and the combos are based on power, regeneration, and focus, which is like your special power. So matching up these different combos together, like you can actually like put in like a power hit, a regen hit, and a focus hit. So, like, your power hit does extra damage, but then when you hit with your regen hit, it does damage to the enemy like normal, but it will grant you some life back. And if you hit it with the focus, it'll fill up your focus meter for some. So there's, like, this strategy in how you set up your combos so that, you know, you're not dropping down in health and having to look for health meters all over the place, or and you can continually build up your focus meter quicker. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. It's different, certainly, from what other things are going on in the games industry right now. And then, you know, the other part is it's some action platforming. It's very reminiscent of, say, something like Uncharted, where, you know, it tells you where, you know, you kind of have to platform at. But unlike Uncharted, it's not just like, or Assassin's Creed, where it's like, jump on these spots and just move. Like, it tells you where you need to jump, but then they'll throw in, like, little obstacles, like a billboard where it'll flip around. So you have to time it so that you can get onto the billboard and, like, shimmy across before it knocks you off to your death or whatever. So it's kind of cool.
Wow.
And then there's, I've only played through the first, like, two or three chapters of the game. And the one part where I was like, yeah, I don't know about this, is there was a boss fight, very Japanese in its design. Where it was, like, you know, lots of damage, and you kind of have to figure out the way to do it. Like, so for this boss fight that I've had to fight, the first form of him charges at you, so you need him to charge, mm-hmm. and, like, he hits the wall, and then he's stunned, and you can get a couple hits in. And then the second one is, you know, he's firing these, like, laser beams or something at you, and you're kind of dodging through, and you still need to get enough hits on him to knock him down. Like, you need to break his shield or whatever. And then there's a third one where he has an even longer meter, and you're actually, like, throwing punches at him to build up your focus meter, but you're not doing any damage. And then you have to use your special power to break his shield and do the damage. It's kind of an annoying battle, so
It sounds typical Capcom.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, typical Capcom in-house design.
Yes. And it's such a shame, too, because it's like the rest of this game is, like, atypical for what they normally do. And then it's like, oh, well, we have to have a boss fight because that's what we do.
Yeah.
So we're going to throw this big behemoth who's all tattooed up and looks absurd. Everything else in the game kind of has, like, this nice, sleek, stylized look to it. And then they throw in this utterly Japanese boss battle. And it's like, ah.
But I'm picturing Jeff right now in the game.
Yeah. Jeff
as
was
the boss.
Jeff was the boss, yeah.
He's sitting on the couch.
And, like, if you got too close to him, you got contact drunk. And you stumbled around.
And if you knock over his beer, he gets up, gets another one, comes back with a new life meter.
Right.
Typical Jeff.
That would make an awesome boss.
But yeah.
This chick walked into my store today. That'd be the start of the fucking the battle.
It's like Jeff just like drops down, and all of a sudden it's like there's an arena that shows up. And yeah.
Quick, take your cigarettes right before I start singing Bruce Springsteen.
I mean, the person you're playing as, this Neela, she's a memory hunter, and she is working for, like, this resistance, which I'm sure is going to, you know, in typical game like this fashion, where it's going to turn out that the person you're working for is actually the bad guy, but...
No.
I'm shocked.
Right. I'm just, like, that's what I'm picturing already.
Yeah, we've been playing games long enough where you can see it coming. Very few games actually twisted in a sense that you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was
part, I mean,
like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if anything of this generation of games has proven that they're extremely predictable.
Yeah.
You know?
I would say, because, I mean, as I said, like, some of the stuff in this game is really, like, interesting and well put together. There's one other aspect where you can change a target's memory. So the one that I experienced so far was a... you hack into this lady's memory, and she's trying to help her husband, who's, I don't know exactly what's wrong with him, but they're doing a memory transfusion from her to him to kind of get him to remember his life or whatever. And you, like, use the right analog stick to rewind the memory, mm-hmm. and at different points you can change things, so you can... unlock the restraint on his wrist on the bed. You can change the fluid that gets injected to him. So instead of the memory fluid getting injected, something else gets injected, which makes him crazy. And he then attacks the doctor, who then has to end up killing him. Like, it was just kind of cool. Like, this is something different. I haven't seen this in a game, so. Which is interesting that we're getting that, you know, here,
yeah.
Just 5-6 months before the new consoles are going to come out.
Well, hopefully it's a good sign of what's to come, you know, yeah. Where, you know, they have all this power now to realize worlds, and it's just a matter of putting together a compelling story and something unique, you know, narrative-wise.
Right. Which, I mean, something unique from a narrative perspective. Tony's been playing BioShock Infinite, but I think he's going to make Jeff cry.
Make Jeff cry. Am I?
Again.
Could be. I mean, unique from a narrative perspective, yes. BioShock is beautiful. It tells a very interesting story so far. I am not particularly far. I've gotten the first two. They don't call them plasmids. What do they call them now?
What did they call them?
They're Vigors.
Vigors, yes.
Yeah. Two.
Possession and the firebombing one, whatever it's called. But the actual gameplay of the game is not very good.
No.
I liken the shooting to firing a garden hose, because it doesn't feel like you have any control over what you're doing whatsoever. You're just kind of like hanging it out there and just like swinging your gun around. But the funny part is I'm pulling the trigger and everyone's dying. So It feels like I'm not an instrument of what's going on.
I can see that. I can see that. I would say though, before you completely pass judgment, I'll wait for all the different gameplay elements to open up.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
I think personally they did that on purpose in order to allow you to combine and be more creative. Because if you put in like realistic recoil and all those things into the gun, I think it will slow down the combination of using different powers at a different time for a different, you know.
That's true. That's true. Effect. But then again, if you're going to have a portion of your game where a significant portion where it's just shooting or melee combat, those things should feel like authentic in some sort of way. And both the melee and the shooting is pretty awful.
I was killing people
in the melee, and I was swinging wildly, and there was a finishing move that seemed to happen randomly every once in a while. It felt completely out of my control.
I just like that Walter agrees with me. I'm enjoying this now.
I don't know that Walter necessarily agrees with you. He just
I'm seeing both.
He's asking me to tip not.
I see the compromise they had to make.
I think, if you like BioShock's combat from 1 and 2, this is just as good as those, I think.
I think that was my problem with it, was I didn't particularly love BioShock's combat in 1 or 2. I thought 2 was a little better than 1. But I liked it because I enjoyed the world and the story. I stomached it because of the world and the story. The world and story wasn't quite as good, I don't think I would have been as high on those games.
Yeah, I have to say, that's the one thing that's going to drive me on, is that I really want to know what's going on, because they've really set it up extremely well.
It's one of those situations where when designing a game where you have to make it okay in so many aspects of combat and flexibility in order to create your own kind of unique action sequence, that if they concentrated on just making the melee perfect or the shooting just perfect, something would have fallen to the cracks. So they just had a compromise all the way around, you know?
Yeah, I think that's also a thing you see when you start pushing consoles to their limit, is that the cracks in what they're eventually able to design start to appear.
Exactly,
They start hitting like crisis with AI, like having to turn it off and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When you push something to its graphical limit, or you start getting to that point where the console just can't do anymore, and you wish it could, but it can't.
So I think it's one of those cases where I know a lot of people who, it's a play style too. A lot of people like to get up close and personal with melees and stuff, and they feel it's not fulfilling to see that person, you know, stabbed in front of them and all that stuff. But I think it's just a design choice in order to make everything else function, you know.
I think also, Tony, you probably haven't gotten to like the Skyline stuff yet, right? Like where you're using the rifle.
I have not, no.
Yeah.
When you get to that point, I think you realize the point I'm trying to make. Where in order to make that kind of play mechanic, which is a major one, and it's a functional one, it's not like you latch on and all of a sudden it goes in automatic mode. You know?
Yeah,
there's a reason why they didn't expand completely on this kind of combat or this kind of combat. It's supposed to work as a whole. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. And you are technically, you are on rails when you're going on the rails, but it's totally playable. It's not scripted. Like, you get to play around with them. It's really cool.
Yeah, once you get to that point, you might change your mind. Who knows, you know, but...
And then you'll get to another point towards the end of the game, and you'll be like, ah.
And I'll change my mind back.
the boss fight at the end that you fight three times in a row.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
For some reason I was thinking about it was probably Tony when I talked to him earlier this week about BioShock, but I've been thinking about it, and like, the more I think about that story, the more like, there are so many plot holes just from the simple nature of like playing with time travel that like when you're on that ride the first time, it's like, yeah, this is great. It makes a lot of sense. But then when you start thinking about like how stuff would actually happen brings up a lot of questions, but
yeah.
we'll let Tony play through it all the way.
It's the same case with the movie Looper. Everyone's the first time out, and then everyone started trashing. It's like, wait, there's so many plot holes all over the place.
Yeah, whenever and you I start playing just tell with people, time.
Yeah, it's so difficult to fill that in to imply a solution on camera. In video games, it's usually like little voice memos you find places. Mm-hmm. I just tell people, man, just hold on for the ride and take it in for what it is, and like just suspend logic. You're playing a game or you're watching a movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like as a piece of entertainment, it's great. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But when you start to analyze it, it's like, oh god. Yeah,
it's part of the video game culture. You hyperanalyze every aspect of it, you know? And that's when people start making themselves miserable, in my opinion.
Yeah, people you know? and people start end up hating everything, and it's
yeah, and then all of a sudden their Twitter feeds or the blogs or it's like you read it back to if there's like select few people I know where if I just read back some of the stuff they wrote like a few months from now, they'd probably be like, God, that person's a douche. And then the big reveal is like, it was you. You know what I mean? Cause you get stuck in this kind of like, you know, you get stuck in this kind of mood where just everything is shit for you. And at that point, you gotta start thinking, you know, is it a product or is it just like the byproduct of where I'm at right now in my life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to step back and just appreciate a piece of entertainment, you know?
Yes.
I think one of the things that happens to people with social media is that instead of being introspective, they kind of just vent. And instead of thinking about what they actually just said, it kind of just disappears into like cyberspace.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of people toss themselves into that rut where they're being extremely negative, but it doesn't matter because they just kind of let it out and it's gone, and they don't see the pattern.
Yeah, I think the negativity kind of feeds off itself. Like you'll see something bad about a game, you'll be like, "Yeah, that is bullshit," and then like everyone's talking about it, and that becomes like the general consensus.
Well, I mean, like
when you might have totally enjoyed something.
You could see
the general consensus for the gaming community is to react with rage as opposed to like waiting for an educated response or waiting for like a full reveal instead of they take a teaser and they blow up because it's not what they imagined in their head, right? So and then they start attacking first and then ask questions later. You know, I'm boycotting your game and you're standing in line outside of a GameStop. You know, midnight launch going like, I swear to God, after this one, I'm not buying ever again, you know?
Well, I mean, like, there's always that, that image of the Modern Warfare 2 boycott, right? From Steam, like, where all those people, like, they all joined the Modern Warfare 2 boycott list, and then you bring up that list and you see, like, 90% of them are in Modern Warfare 2 playing the game, like, so, yeah. You got angry.
That's
and then,
you got over it.
That's what I always tell everyone. Like when it comes to social media, your Facebook, your Twitter, everything, it's not your diary. Just, you know,
right.
don't use it like your diary. Try and just, you can engage people, you can get in conversations, you can get in debate and all that stuff. But when you're using it on a daily basis, you'd be like, you know, I'm hungry. And that's your tweet. You know, it's time to really like, concentrate on how you're using your social media, you know.
Oh, damn, I was going to start doing that too.
I think I would find that extremely valuable, Chris. If you just started telling me when you were hungry.
I'm hungry.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of hungry. I'm gonna tweet it.
Jeff's the anti. Like, basically, if you don't want. I just pointed Jeff's feed. It's like, don't get drunk and start writing lyrics to Bruce Springsteen at 3 in the morning.
Come on, who doesn't want that?
It's entertaining to me. I read that while eating my breakfast, and I'm like, wow, man, Jeff was on a roll last night.
He did all the lyrics to Born in the USA.
Yeah.
Oh,
great.
Maybe Born to Run tomorrow.
You can almost sense how drunk he was by between the hours he started tweeting to the very last one. You're like, oh, look, he was doing okay. Oh, plastered. You know?
So I played one other game that came out this week.
Yeah.
State of Decay. It's an Xbox Live arcade release. It's $20. Mm-hmm. So it's a big money release. I put about 4 hours into it. I don't know how. I'm still only on like the second area. It's an open world GTA-ish zombie game where the zombie apocalypse has happened and it is you trying to survive. There's an RPG element to it, so you do like level up by doing certain things. But it's very much survival. Like, your weapons degrade, they'll break. And once they're gone, they're gone. Ammo, very scarce. So, like, at one point I was running around kicking zombies away from me, trying to get back to the safe house where I could, you know, get over the wall and the people in the safe house could take out the zombies that were chasing me. Cars are, they're around, but they break very quickly, and you know you only have a limited amount of gas. Now there's no actual gas meter on the cars, but they kind of make it seem like if you drive for too long, your car could just putz out, and you'd be left there walking. It's you build up there. There's almost like a strategic element to it where you're building up your base. Right now I've been told by the people that are kind of like running it that we need to add more beds because we've brought in too many survivors that we're now sharing beds and sleep deprivation will set in. So to make everyone kind of happy, I have to get the materials so I can build a new sleeping area. You can build you can grow your own food. You can make your own, workstation or whatever so you can build stuff so you don't have to go out and scavenge. Because that's what a lot of this is. You're, like, driving out, going to houses and, like, picking through the houses, trying to get all the stuff that's in it and bring it back to your base so that you can, you know, keep providing for the people that are there. So it's kind of like The Walking Dead, not the Walking Dead game that came out last year, but like if they were to make a open world version of The Walking Dead. And so when I first started playing it, my main character, this guy Marcus, he died, and it just jumps to another character. It jumps to this other girl, and just, the game just keeps going. Like they kind of like say, hey, he never made it back or whatever. Like they kind of have like a little eulogy for him, and the game just keeps going. Like, and I don't know. Like right now, there's only two main characters that I've been introduced to, but I'm wondering like if she dies, if maybe it jumps to this other girl, Lily, that you know, or like one of the other survivors in the camp. Like, if that's how it works out, that's really kind of cool that the game just keeps going as long as you have survivors.
I read that you permadie, so like.
Yeah, you know, you're kind of like Marcus. When Marcus died, he was dead. He's out.
Okay. Yeah.
But then the game continued on under, like, this other character, this girl, Maya, I believe was her
you
name.
You know what would have been cool? If it imported, like, the your avatar, your Xbox avatars.
And you could play it. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be freaking rad, man.
I mean, it's definitely set up.
We all know Fozzie the Gamer. His character is the dude in the giant Fuzzy. I would love to run around like that, saving society. Are you kidding me? I would kill everyone off to get to Fozzie.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, it is a little janky. It does have a lot of that, like, open world. The open world issues you get in like GTA or Saints Row, where it's just like so much is going on in the world that they can't be, that not everything's polished. So sometimes like characters will get stuck in walls or, right. Like at one point I had a zombie like stuck halfway in a house and halfway out of a house. But overall, it's pretty damn fun. Like, for $20, like, it seems to be a pretty lengthy adventure. Like, it's pretty damn cool. So, highly recommended at this point. Especially if you are a fan of zombie type games.
Or if you're just holding your breath for the new next gen, might as well enjoy something like this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and like GTA 5 and Saints Row 4 aren't going to be out until August and September, so, you know, if you want an open world type game, like, there you go. Knock yourself out. It's pretty well done. Pretty well written for what it is. And,
actually, I have a question for everybody. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
You know the arcade titles, the ones that come on the PSN or whatever?
Yeah.
Typical price is anywhere from $5, $20 in the extreme.
Right.
Like, what's the limit? What's the limit for you to buy an arcade title? Where do you see yourself going, like, no, this is just too much?
I don't know if I have one.
No?
Like, from what I heard, that State of Decay game is as good as many $60 games. So maybe $20, it would be nice if they kept $20 as the model, but if you're delivering everything that a full retail game does, I don't care.
Right, well, I also don't know if, like, what the limit is for me. I mean, cause I buy a lot of games on Steam, right. And they have a very varied pricing model, and, like, sometimes, like, I played game Mars Warlogs, it was $10, it was a, like, 8-hour RPG. I mean, it's a little janky because it's by an independent developer, but, you know, for $10, like, I got a pretty decent game out of it. And then, that's what Jeff was saying. Like, I mean, some of these games that, you know, they're pricing at $10, $20, they're the quality of a $60 game. Like, at Call of Duty, like, if you're just playing the single-player campaign... which, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure how many are doing that, but I'm sure somebody out there is.
Dear God, why would you do that?
Like, you're paying $60 for a 4.5-hour game.
Well, I bring that up because Next Generation seems to be, you know, fixed on the digital distribution, digital sales, you know, all your games living in a hard drive. It only makes sense that because, you know, the quality visually of a game usually means more time developing. And that doesn't necessarily exclude, like, arcade games, unless they go with, like, oh, a throwback 8-bit era game, which is, I think, is just, you know, a false sale feature, in my opinion.
Right,
it's
right.
Just kind of like, we're making shit on budget. Here's the, well, let's just make the art look a feature, you know?
Like, I think that this, over what, when did Blood Dragon come out? Last month?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, between State of Decay, Blood Dragon, and from everything I've heard about Call of Juarez Gunslinger, these are high quality games at, you know, budget pricing.
Well, it could be a test for the next generation, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, but I'm kind of bracing for arcade titles to reach the $30 mark, just because the expense of developing on a new console it's not cheap, regardless of what, you know, how wide open the door PlayStation makes for indie titles or small studios, you know.
Right.
So, I guess that's where the question is. Everyone has to, you know, I realize what the situation is. I guess it's a question I think a lot of us are going to have to, like, really ask ourselves, you know, as the holiday season nears. It's like, okay, am I ready? You know, I must spend on this console, and how much am I going to spend for the subscription service for all the features and to buy shit on a regular basis? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess it all kind of boils down to quality, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, if they're like, hey, this game is excellent, and we're going to charge you $25-$30 for it, maybe I'll go for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just a random question that popped in my head.
But yeah, as I mentioned, Blood Dragon and the Call of Juarez, like, some of the best games to come out this year have been, you know, from that downloadable side of things. I mean, obviously, yeah. Some of the retail games still kind of dominated our top five of the first half, but, I mean, those games were definitely, at least for me, like, Blood Dragon was up there, and
yeah.
I hadn't played State of Decay yet. That's probably inching up there, so it's an interesting time.
Absolutely. Especially with E3, like, just around the corner.
Yeah. And with E3 right around the corner, Jeff is going to tell us all about his playing Zelda Oracle of Seasons, because that's a new game.
Well, it's new on the 3DS eShop. I got it because it's Zelda, and 2D Zelda. And I think a lot of people might have missed this one, Oracle of Seasons and Ages. They were on the Game Boy Color, like, I think after the Game Boy Advance came out. Like, I think they came out like 2001, something like that. It's really cool. It's 2D Zelda. I'm enjoying it a lot. Kind of visually, yeah, that's pretty much all you need to know. But visually, it kind of looks like the Game Boy Color version of Link's Awakening, which is like somewhere between NES Zelda and Link to the Past. Gameplay is great.
The 3DS, you said?
Yeah, it's on the eShop for 3DS. It's actually on sale, I think, for a little while longer. Like both it and Ages, they're
$4.99 a piece. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's made by Capcom, but you probably wouldn't notice that at all. It's just as good quality as the other 2D Zeldas. I think it's like a little bit below what Link to the Past pulled off. But a distinguishing feature, as you might tell from the title, is you could change the seasons. You have a rod of seasons, and you slowly gain seasons that you could change, the world to. So, like, if you switch it to winter, it'll freeze over lakes, so you can, like, walk over the lakes. Or you switch it to summer, vines will grow on certain walls, and you can get into caves and whatnot.
Hey, baby, my rod makes vines grow.
Crap.
Well, the other thing I really like is one of the upgrades that you get is a feather that allows you to jump, which is rare for a 2D Zelda game. I like being able to jump. It's cool. Only bad thing I could say about it is, much like Link's Awakening, it's not good. Like, I pretty much need a guide between the dungeons because it's not good at pointing you where to go next. Like, you'll generally run into somebody who's like, yeah, you might want to head up north towards these mountains, because the next dungeon's over there. But like Link's Awakening, like, this often involves having to do a bunch of side shit in order to get where you need to go. And it's not really good at pointing that stuff out. And which is another odd thing about it to me. I was talking to Chris about this. Like, it doesn't, like, Link to the Past, they marked the dungeons on the map and numbered them, and this does neither. It's just like, well, headed in this general direction, and you might run into something. So it's kind of, unless you have, like, all day to sit around and screw around with the world and talk to everybody and just randomly explore, you might need a guide to get, in between dungeons. But, I mean, other than that, it's really good 2D Zelda. Like, I'm like, halfway through the game, and I'm loving it, man. I have not gotten to try Ages yet, but I am assuming that is also pretty great. But, yeah, that's
such
Zelda.
Such a modern gamer problem. Especially, like, people who, like, were, whose exposure to video games is this generation, if they go back and play some of his older RPGs, they're gonna be like, how the hell did anyone even get past anything?
Yeah. Well, you spent more time on games then, too. Like,
yeah, because back then, it was like, that Super Nintendo was like about $70 cartridge when they first came out with a battery backup, and you had to justify spending $70 in that economy on the video game, and you spent like so many hours just exploring and shit just kind of came together,
Yeah, it's just, I feel it's weird to me because Link to the Past does a pretty good job of laying out what you need to do to get where you're going next. And that was 1991, I want to say. And this, these Zelda games from Capcom came out like 10 years later, and it's like, they feel more old school than Link to the Past. It's a little odd, but like, it's still like, I'm nitpicking an awesome 2D Zelda game. Just get them; they're on sale right now. Buy them if you like Zelda.
Yeah, you can get both games for $10 total. So
yeah,
yeah.
I played a little bit of the original Zelda this past weekend on the 3DS, and I was like, wow, this is really old.
That one has not aged the best, but, like, I still did play through it, like, maybe 5 years ago, like, all the way through, so.
Yeah, it's just funny, like, playing that, like, going from, like, a 3D Zelda to that, like, well, this is so rudimentary, and, like, it's not particularly easy, because, like, if you get hit, like, you're kind of screwed, because control does not, it's not in your best, that doesn't do the best things for you, but, like, the dungeons are like, wow, like, this is not particularly hard. Right. You just kind of got to work your way through, so.
Oh, like, the puzzles and stuff, for sure, but, yeah. Dude, like, you do struggle a little bit in that game, especially when you run into those fucks with the sword and shields, and you have to, like, hit them from the side. Oh, yeah. God, I hate those guys.
Yeah, and the combat stuff can be pretty difficult at times.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for games. I did play a little bit of Grid 2, but we'll save that for another time. I got some issues with that game, but I haven't played enough of it yet. Let's do some news, Tony.
It's a good thing I'm still awake.
Yeah!
I think we should start with news that makes Jeff cry, because that's my favorite kind of news. Precursor Games. See, Jeff already knows what the news is. Announced a couple weeks ago that their Kickstarter campaign for Shadow of the Eternals. Mm-hmm. This week they canceled it.
They canceled the Kickstarter.
Yes. They said they are temporarily canceling the Kickstarter. We'll ignore the fact that they were a little over halfway through their campaign and only about 10% of the way to their goal. They said that their campaign had caused a host of new exciting opportunities to make the game better than they envisioned.
They actually got actual funding instead of asking people for it?
Yeah, there's a rumor that they found an actual publisher for their game.
But, yeah, because the publisher was like, oh, look at how close it is to reaching its goal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They were at $127,000. The goal was $1.35 million.
Yeah, which I mean, they had already collected $150,000 on their own not Kickstarter crowdsourced funding off their website. So.
And they'd also announced the week before that since they don't have any other source of funding, if the Kickstarter didn't go through, then the game probably would not be made. So, this is an interesting turn.
We should also reiterate that they wanted that one point whatever million for the first episode of the fucking game. That's ridiculous.
I mean, knowing what we know, I mean, Kickstarter's been really interesting in kind of showing what, what it costs game developers to make a game. So we've seen some, like, where they actually do get funded, and then they're like, oh, we need more money.
Right.
We somehow, like, burned through, like, we didn't plan for some of this shit, and we didn't, factor in all this other stuff. So it's been, some of this Kickstarter stuff has been very eye-opening. But when you see a company like Precursor, who's basically Silicon Knights, come through and do that, it's just really, really shady.
And, like, I think the fact that, they are the ones doing it hurts them. I think people who fund Kickstarter things generally know what they're funding, and, who would give your money to Dennis Dyack? I want a sequel to that game, but, dude, I don't trust him at all,
So. Maybe it gets made, and I hope it's good. Like, I really kind of like the episodic format. And I'd love to see, an adventure game like Eternal Darkness come out in that fashion, but who knows? I'm not holding my breath for this one.
Yeah, if they make it, I will buy it, but same boat, I am not, like, expecting it at all.
What else we got?
Let's see. News from Robotaki, the game developer. which was founded by former Call of Duty notable Robert Bowling. So he was working late one night. That day at the studio, they had installed a panic button. Apparently on his way out the door, not really knowing what it was or what it would do, one of the employees of Robotaki pushed the panic button and left. So Robert Bowling is the only person at the studio. He's there. Also there, since he worked on Call of Duty, is a life-size statue of Ghost from Call of Duty. The panic button has been pushed. LAPD responds with a number of armed officers who burst through the door and proceed to clear the offices of Robotaki and get involved in a tense standoff with the statue, which is epic. Thankfully, no shots were fired. But
this could be my favorite news story of the year.
But there's a. I'm going to send you guys the picture because the picture is awesome of a bunch of officers pointing their guns at a statue.
because
they think it's an actually armed person who could.
That's great.
They also ended up detaining Robert Bowling for a while until they figured out that he was actually a game developer and not someone who's just attacking people in the studio.
Wow.
that's incredible. You know what's the funniest part? Taxpayers pay for all that.
That's right. Awesome. Actually, the best part is that at the end of the standoff, Bowling and the officers sit down and play some NES games, which I'm assuming the taxpayers also paid for.
Yeah, of course. That's overtime.
Have you guys ever worked in an office with a panic button?
No. Or if I have, I don't know where it would be. Like, nobody's ever told me where it is. So,
do you count Apaches as panic buttons?
Yeah.
No, I think those are the opposite of panic buttons.
Okay. No, I never worked in an office because we walked around with armor and rifles, assault rifles. If you needed to hit a panic button, you're probably in the Navy. I shouldn't do that. You know, armed forces are armed forces. I'm sorry, guys. This is just a carryover from, like, the whole Army branch rivalry thing. I don't mean it. Hey, if anyone's out there listening in the Navy, I apologize.
My cousin's, he's actually a Master Chief in the Navy.
Yeah.
He used to fly, attack helicopters, so.
Yeah.
His job wasn't exactly safe, so.
Yeah, it's just to carry, it just happens automatically. You put me in a room like a Marine, an Air Force guy,
right.
And a Navy guy. Like, everyone first of all turns on the Air Force guy, and then the Navy guy gets it, and then the Marine gets it for a little bit until he starts, like, going, oh, you know, Marine, and then half the people stay quiet, and then the Army guy keeps poking at the bear to see what happens, you know? that's just like a typical, like, military base, like, outing. You know,
it's all in good fun though.
It really is. At the end of the night, we share a beer, we have a good time, you know, and there's the respect of, like, you know, hey dude, you had the balls to sign up, you know?
Right. What else you got, Tony?
I think we need to also talk about, my ex-boyfriend, the Space Tyrant, which was, put out on Steam Greenlight, this week. A game that actually advertises itself as the gayest game ever made. an all-gay cast of storylines in a point-and-click adventure. So it completely focuses on gay characters and gay issues. I'm imagining would be the first game on Steam of its kind. How do you guys feel about this?
It looked like it could be funny.
I have to say the soundtrack is quite amusing.
Like, it doesn't seem mean-spirited or anything. It just seems fun, you know.
Well, it's not pornographic. It's just very like male on male gay, and I think a lot of, like, if you see some of the comments that people are making on the Greenlight campaign, it makes a lot of people very uncomfortable, like people reporting it as inappropriate. one person said on the campaign page, don't like gays, downvote. So you're getting a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. This seems like the kind of, like, you get so many games that are based on, like, heterosexual relationships. Like that, shoot, why can't I remember the name of the stupid game with the sheep?
Oh, God, what?
Sheepfucker HD.
Oh.
Catherine.
No. Catherine, yes. You end up with games like that, no one complains, but this game focuses on gay folks, and that is somehow objectionable. And I think we should move in a direction where this kind of game is appropriate.
I think it's more of like the bravado of them to come out and just be like, we're embracing this, we're the gayest thing on video games. And a lot of people fear that kind of stuff. Whether, you know, that's just the reality of our society. That's why so many few states are like passing, you know, marriage laws, equal marriage laws for, you know, all sexes. And because a lot of people just don't want to think that way because they never fought that way before. And, you know, and as everyone knows, change is the most terrifying thing on this world. You change anything and people flip the fuck out, you know. So I think it's just one of those things. Where it just makes people realize, hey, this is the world you live in. You can't just live in your little clean little bubble, and they flip out, you know.
And I think something like this is one of those. I mean, games are obviously protected by free speech, so you can make a game about whatever you want to make it about. Yeah. But if you find it objectionable, just don't buy it. Like the game doesn't have to exist because you think it's awful. It just doesn't have to be in your Steam library.
Exactly.
There's nothing making you look at this game. I don't understand why you're against it because the content of the game makes you uncomfortable. Well, don't play it.
I got into a conversation on Twitter with Josh, movie guru, and somebody else last week that they were questioning why the humans.
Wait, Josh had something to say on Twitter?
Yes.
I find that shocking.
Right? Well, I guess somebody had asked, like, why the Human Centipede 3 was made, and then they were, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend either of those, the previous two movies as good cinema, but, like, if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. And, like, they were kind of like, why does this need to be made? Like, it doesn't, but you also don't need to watch it. Like, the guy who's directing it, Tom Six, like, he has every right to make whatever shit he wants to make. And the same here, and I'm not calling my ex-boyfriend the space tyrant shit, but like anybody can go make whatever they want and you can play whatever you want and it shouldn't fucking matter.
America.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, this game is not for me, but
right.
I mean, it looks like it has a cool art style, like very, you know, Adult Swim-ish type looking art style to it, and it looks like it might be pretty funny. Like there, up the screenshots, there's some pretty funny looking imagery and dialogue in it. So, I mean, you know. You're entitled to have whatever the fuck you want.
Yep.
All right, last thing I got. Deus Ex The Fall. Chris, I'm going to let you talk about this because I know you're excited about this.
I don't know excited is the word. I was
amused.
Like, yeah, I thought it was, like, I didn't know what to say about it this morning. Like, Square Enix came out and they announced this game, which everyone was kind of expecting to be the next Deus Ex, you know, console PC game, and it is an iPad iOS game, first-person shooter. But what was really kind of funny about it was the way they revealed it, and they sit down, they're talking about how they wanted to continue the Deus Ex story, how this is a direct sequel to I guess there was a Deus Ex book that came out. It's a direct sequel off of that, dealing with some of the characters from there. So you're not playing a, you know, Trenchcoat Man. from Human Revolution. You're playing somebody else. But they're sitting there, they're talking about this, and they're like, well, all right, let's show you the game. And then you get about maybe 15, 20 seconds of actual gameplay that you can see in this, like, 3-minute trailer. And the rest of it is just these dudes sitting at a couch, like, holding an iPad, talking about what they're playing and not showing it to you.
That's lovely.
Yeah. But I guess the big thing is, like, Twitter went apeshit this morning. Everybody was screaming, and I kind of agree with Tony, who said that, you know, this is probably just the companion piece to, you know, a full retail version coming out at some point of something. Probably not of this game, but of a new Deus Ex. But yeah, fucking the internet, so funny.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone's trying to figure out the whole mobile market, and, you know, yeah. I hate to think this is a scramble to try and cash in.
Right. But, the other weird thing is, I guess earlier this week, Final Fantasy IV released on iOS and Android devices at $17 or $15.99, so $16. And this Deus Ex game, which has some, like, you know, nice production values to it, $6.99. Like, the pricing scheme that the Square Enix is all over the place. They don't know what they're doing. Like, they're just throwing shit at a wall and hoping it sticks.
Yeah. Well, Star Wars KOTOR came out at $12 as well, so.
Yeah.
So the price is all over the point. There's definitely no, maybe Square Enix is finding success at $20 or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I'm sure what they're doing is they're hitting, you know, their biggest fans. They're gonna be like, yeah, I'll download that. Like, doesn't matter what they price it at, they'll get it. And then at some point later, they'll drop the price to, you know, $9, $10, and $7, and they'll get another round of people to buy it. So,
well, if it's one thing we do know about gaming is nostalgia sells no matter what.
Yep.
Nintendo's Nintendo Wii and the Wii U seem to be being powered by it right now. So,
yep. I guess Tony, you don't. You said that was your last news piece.
Yes.
They announced a new Halo game, though.
They did. I missed that.
Yeah, it's called Spartan Assault. It's coming to Windows 8 and Windows Touch devices.
I can't imagine why I missed that.
it's a top-down shooter.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It kind of reminds. Like, I don't know if you guys played Assault Heroes on Xbox Live, on the arcade, like, a while ago. They came out early in the generation.
Better remember it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this looked like. It looked like Assault Heroes, but with Halo shit, so. That's not bad, but, you know, why isn't this an Xbox Live arcade game as well?
You gotta push Windows 8, man.
Yeah.
You can 7 other Windows people use, you gotta get the 8.
yeah, I don't know. So E3 is coming.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Next week. I believe everything kicks off on Monday. So.
Yeah.
I thought we'd do some predictions, but we got some questions from Earl, one of our friends. He runs Nerds on the Rocks. He sent me a list of questions that he'd like answered from us. So. What is Rare's historic game that they're doing? what's this historic franchise?
It's gonna be Banjo, and it's gonna be a Kinect game. Banjo Dancing.
Banjo Dancing. I like that one.
Mark my words, it's something awful like that.
Not Banjo 4?
Yes, it's gonna be some Kinect crap.
It seems like a dream. Like, I dream of Conker, but, like, even a traditional Banjo platformer seems like it's just hoping for way too much.
Yeah. Banjo and Conker just aren't marketable. Perfect Dark has a better place right now. Especially because there's such a giant gap with, like, actual decent female leads in video games.
I think Perfect Dark makes less sense because it's a way more crowded market. Whereas you put out a, like, let's say that was a new Banjo game, there's so few 3D platformers that, and people who remember Banjo get excited. Like, I don't think I would get excited for a new Perfect Dark at this point, especially after the last one.
Dude, if you get excited for Animal Crossing or whatever the hell it is, you get excited for anything else that makes you think you're 12 again. So it's not, I think it's a matter of them being gone for so long and it needs something to have like a mass appeal. I think that's what you gotta think about.
I think Perfect Dark is a bad play. I think your best shot is doing Banjo, but in my dream world it's Conker too, but I don't see it. Like, I don't see any of those. I feel like it's gonna be something really, really dumb.
Yeah. If Conker sees the light of day, I'll be completely and totally shocked.
Also, I will throw out there though, Chris, I think you might be right though. I think there is a good like 50% chance it's Killer Instinct.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't understand that either. Like, I mean, just like you're saying, like, what Walter's saying, like, Banjo just doesn't, there's no market for it. I don't see where the market is for Killer Instinct. Like,
fighting games are still, you know, it's relatively low budget and they make profit still. So,
Mortal Kombat, for that, there are many people buying Injustice. So
right, but with Injustice, with Mortal Kombat, you're trading on its name, right? Like, Mortal Kombat is a series that, you know, there are people that like Mortal Kombat. Injustice, you're trading on those superheroes. What are you trading on with Killer Instinct? Like,
People remember it.
Nostalgia, dude. Ultra Combo, all the over-the-top stuff that started with Ultra Combo started all the Johnny Screaming Announcer stuff.
Alright. I mean, I'm not a fighting game fan, so for me it's like, if that's what it is, that's highly disappointing, but.
It'd be ultra disappointing to me, but I did see Rare retweet someone that sent a picture of Killer Instinct a couple days ago. Like, someone's like, oh yeah, I can't wait to play this. And I was like, picture of Killer Instinct, and Rare retweeted it. I'm like, that's a little weird.
I don't think that was a sign, Joe.
I don't know. No. I'm just keeping my eyes open. It could be, but I don't know.
All right, what hook will the 3D Mario have?
More coins.
More coins.
Oh god, I hope not. Like, that was if it's dumbest anything like fucking that one, gimmick. Here,
yeah.
You get to play as Luigi, cause it's, you know, the year of Luigi.
It's not Super Mario, you know, Universe or whatever the hell they're doing this time. It's Super Luigi Universe.
It'll be a twist that, you know, Nintendo fans go apeshit with and the general public just goes, who cares?
Oh, no, I've got it. Mario and Luigi finally reveal their homosexual relationship.
Oh, God.
It's like Bert and Ernie.
They're brothers, man. That's incest.
That's even worse. You know what I think would be cool? I doubt it. That's what it will be, is if it was something with how last year's SSX was, where you always saw a ghost of, like, your friend's best performance running through the level as Mario. You have to try to beat that.
You know what it probably might be? They finally use the Wii U controller properly as you place it on the ground and swap your hands over it over and over again. Like those demos they did 2 years ago.
Like where you actually use it as a pad as opposed to
you literally
to like
put
control.
It on the floor and stand over it and do gestures and Mario will mimic it.
I certainly fucking hope not.
Like,
that was a feature. That's a feature they spent a lot of time talking about at E3 2 years ago, and they made some poor girl demo it all day long. And I want to see people like Jeff being forced to use that feature.
If it's anything like that, I won't get it.
Our predictions are so sad right now. Like, you know, two questions in, and I'm just like so depressed for E3.
Hey, you don't like.
You know my experiences. I'm going next week, and my experiences. You kind of predictions are crap. Everything's kind of predetermined, and the moment I walk into the show floor, everything's clear, perfectly clear with signage. So, you know, the mystery's gone the moment you arrive, you land in Los Angeles, and the first pictures from your team setting up the stages, it's like, oh, so that's going to be here, oh, that's going to be here, oh, that's going to be here, that's going to be here. So I don't really, like, get invested too much in, like, predictions instead of, like, having fun and, like, trolling, you know, friends. Yeah. A bit, you know?
It's just like, I'm just, like, envisioning your predictions coming true, Walter. This is the worst thing ever.
Like, Nintendo's going ape shit. Rare's going crazy.
It comes from a little bit of logic, all right? Because right. Nintendo right now is trying to win back the third party, and they need to showcase how to use their damn system, because obviously the third party has no idea how to program for it. So what better way than to use a flagship like Mario to be like, these are the full range of stuff that we had intentions for the Wii U. It's all here in this particular game. And here's how this should be a jumping point for any third party who wants to embrace it. You know?
Yes.
I think you guys are all going to laugh really hard when I'm so right about Rare. I just don't. It's going to be something like Kinect based.
You think it's
going to
be Banjo Kinect?
Banjo dancing, dude. Something stupid as fuck.
Dancing bears.
I wouldn't. I'm not dismissing it at all.
He's a bear.
Mario,
right?
Microsoft's pretty intent on pushing Kinect as a family friendly center, and not like how it was reported in German television as this giant spy in your living room. So.
All right, next question is, what sequels do you expect to see from Microsoft?
Everything that they released in this generation is coming out of Microsoft.
I think Dragon Age 3.
Because
they announced their partnership with EA, and I think that's going to be the flagship exclusive title for the fall.
Well, you're getting the Maddens. You're getting, you know.
Yeah, but those aren't exclusives. I think that there's
something big
that they have.
Oh, you mean exclusives? Oh, because, I mean, you're getting the Halos.
But
whether or not they announce it at this particular E3, who knows?
Right. I mean, they've announced all that
stuff.
We will
get a Halo. Like, Halo 5 is coming. We know that, right?
But is it going to be presented at Monday during the press conference?
So, I mean, there's a lot of people saying teaser trailer. I hope not. I think that you need to focus on, if you're Microsoft or Sony, you need to focus on what's coming out in the first 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be like 18 months from now, a year after the system comes out, you can have Halo 5.
They teased Halo 4 like that, though.
Yeah, Halo 4, the Xbox 360 was already out. You didn't need to sell more of those.
Well, when you think about what's still left, like, Sony hasn't even shown the final look of the machine.
Right.
No one's announced price point. No one's announced, like, no one showcased the full dashboard interface, you know?
Right.
Full partnerships, the apps are coming in place, the hard drive options, all those little things are still standing in the air. So there's plenty of room to kind of fill a conference with like specifics to get people to realize like this is for real, this is coming. And most importantly, the date and price, you know?
Right.
And then to concentrate on four or five launch titles, that's like a pretty jam-packed show when you think about it.
I think there will be still a lot of questions in the air, and I think Microsoft doesn't want to answer them because they canceled their press roundtables afterwards. So
I think that doesn't come from a point where they're hiding stuff. I think that's because there's a lot of negotiations still in the air, and usually when you're negotiating something, you don't discuss it until the tables are all in agreement. You know what I mean?
I just think like the big questions that everyone's had since Microsoft show, I don't think they get answered. Like I think
I agree with you, Jeff. I think those same questions aren't going to be answered by Sony either. We're not going to hear shit about that stuff until September, October.
Because in my opinion, and I'm not calling it my industry connections or anything like that. It's just my particular like opinion, just knowing how things work in business. There's still a lot of negotiating going on. And you don't speculate when stuff like that's still on the table. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and they had a giant PR fuck up after the reveal, so.
Yeah. But that's only messaging. That could have easily been messaged better and people would have been a little bit less freaked out. They still would have freaked out. That's just
right.
Our thing in our culture, we like to freak out. That's our thing.
But I mean, when you had multiple people saying multiple different things, like,
yeah,
that was
that's
really
the messaging.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe right now it's just like, hey, our message is we're going to keep our mouth shut. We're not going to do this right now. And once we get all our shit together, we're going to sit you down, maybe Gamescom, maybe like sometime in September, and then we'll hit you with everything. You'll get all the details, but I hope it doesn't turn out like the way the Vita went, where it was like we all left going, yeah, the Vita's fucking awesome, and then over the next 6 to 8 months, all this like negative shit kept leaking out, and all of it was true about the Vita. So
yeah,
I really hope that that doesn't happen to either one of these systems. Like I want them to be good.
I think they will be good. It's easy to go in the negative side of things because there's a lot of unknowns, and everyone's really cynical nowadays. You know,
right.
And I always say when new console comes around, it should be about embracing the new possibilities, you know? And I think it's time too in for us to kind of get out of our old mindset about how we traditionally approach gaming. And it's going to be more of a digital embrace, and that's going to take a lot of people, it's going to take a lot of people to adjust to that, you know? And a lot of people aren't going to be happy to be forced to adjust to a digital age, you know?
Right.
But it's the logical choice. Otherwise, this industry can't continue. You know?
Hey, I fully embraced the Wii U. I don't know about you all, but I loved
it. That system sucks.
No, it doesn't. Chris, back me up, man.
I like my Wii U.
Thank you.
Right now,
when was the last time you played it?
Last week, I played some Super Metroid. on the pad. Great. I didn't even turn my TV on. Like, well, I just turned the gamepad on and sat on my chair.
Hell of an endorsement. But you know what's sad? You tell that story to somebody and there's some kid that's going to be like, I want that.
Right.
I want that experience.
To answer the question of what sequel I expect to see from Microsoft, Fable 4, I think that gets announced.
No, that's being announced. No, I'm not sure if it's Fable 4, but Fable franchise game is coming.
Fable Anniversary was announced yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's an Xbox 360 game.
And it's Fable 1 or what?
It's a remake of Fable 1, yeah.
Yay.
I think Fable 4 gets announced too, though. And I'm hearing rumblings of Crackdown 3. I'm hoping that's not true.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't know.
Of their new IPs, what genre would you love to see Microsoft tackle? So they have 8 new IPs coming.
Didn't we answer that question last week?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't remember.
I answered a lot of questions. But, do we have... Is there one out there you want to see them touch?
Please. Strategy games.
I want a proper bowling game.
Proper bowling game. Okay.
It hasn't been one since the Wii Sports pack-in. And we need a proper
bowling game. Because you know what? The Kinect, in Kinect Sports, there's a bowling. Actually, you could play it. You could play 9, 10.
I just want bar games. I want to throw darts in my living room at nothing. And the Kinect just kind of picks it up.
I don't see how precise it could be. Like, I understand it's way, way more advanced than what the Kinect does, but it's just, you know, with a game like that.
I am very, because I dismissed the Kinect when it first came out as a gimmick. I'm really curious. That's one of the first things I kind of go walk over and that's one of the first appointments I have, actually, is walk over and sit down with them so I can actually see this thing working and how precise it is. You know what I mean? Because I think there's going to be a bigger market for those games that kind of keep you active in your living room, whether it be exercise or mimicking sports. But if this thing actually properly works, I think it'll be a good alternative for, like, you know,
right,
for that particular brand. I think that might actually blow up. Cause if anything, if you notice like things like the Nike Fuel Band and all those other things that track your movements and stuff, that's kind of become a giant industry in its own. And if that can blow up, it's just a positive thing, you know?
I think exercise games will be even better with it. But I just, like, something like bowling or darts, it depends a lot on when you release the object, which, you know, we had the advantage of having buttons on it, you know? Like, that's...
Well, they're saying it's extremely precise, so I'm, like, extremely curious. What I do when I walk into these demos is because they set it for optimal performance, right? I was at one of the first, I was at the E3 where they first talked about Kinect. And you can tell that lights were lit a certain way, there's a certain amount of space available, when they set it up, they made sure no one was standing behind you, and things of that nature. So I want to see the setup, because now we know realistically how it, you know, how it could sit in your living room, whether it works or not. So I want to see if it'll work in like a limited space, if it recognizes how close I'm getting, how far away, Yeah, and just how accurate it is.
It's going to record you fapping, and they're going to send it to the government. That's what's going to happen.
I think that's your concern, my friend.
Actually, no, there was a news report. I don't have the source because I saw it like a week ago. That, yeah, Microsoft is sharing data with the government, and which is kind of scary when you consider that the Kinect is like required and always on.
Didn't it say it doesn't have to be on?
It has to be plugged in. There are options to shut features off of the Kinect.
It's just kind of sketchy. It's kind of scary. I'm scared.
You shouldn't be scared, though.
Just stop.
I'm not scared.
I'm jerking off in front of the internet.
Unless you're, like, you know, doing terroristic stuff in front of your Kinect. And really, if you are, you're an idiot.
Stop that. Just stop that.
Don't do stuff like that. Like
it's like
there.
The people. It's like the people that freak out because there's a cop behind you. It's like you're not doing anything wrong. You shouldn't be freaking out. There's a cop behind you. All
right. If what if there's a guy in a cubicle somewhere watching me fap, and what if he's fapping to me fapping? Like
and you've made someone happy.
Yeah.
First of all, you have a very high.
I feel like I should be getting paid.
You have a very high like image of yourself that you think people want to see you flap. Fap. Oh,
there's some guy out there that wants to see me fap, guaranteed.
Good God.
I don't want to meet this guy, and I definitely don't want to shake his hand.
Probably walk into your store.
What games do you hope wish to be announced for the PS Vita? I don't even know at this point.
A good one?
Yeah.
There's good games. There are good games.
Few and far between, though.
I guess
how about another Valkyria Chronicles game? Done.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah, I don't even know. I like my Vita, but I really don't know what to say about that thing right now.
No. Yeah, they kind of lost focus. And that's a hell of a job trying to get back.
Yeah. You know? Who has the most approved with their press conference? Since Nintendo's not having one, I guess we can exclude them.
I think there's an interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I think we could include them. I think though, even if you include them, Microsoft has a lot to prove. You guys could say all you want about like whether you like the show or not. I think the general consensus is a lot of people came away with negative reactions to the Microsoft show.
I agree with that.
I think Sony has a lot. For me personally, Sony has a lot to prove to me.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot.
I think, if anything, Sony's like the safest bet right now because they seem to be sticking closer to. They seem to just be slightly going out of their way to improve this current experience.
Right.
They're not.
But for me, the current experience is subpar.
No, don't say that.
Like, I can understand that too. But when you look at the stuff they're adding in with the cloud gaming.
Right, and that's my big question though. When's that coming? Is it coming?
Launch window.
No, but I don't. I have no faith that we're going to see that ever.
No.
I mean, there are things that they promised with the PS3 that we've never gotten.
Yeah.
I mean, there's things they promised with the PSP that we never got. There's things we promised with the Vita we still haven't got. And they're going, oh, it's coming with the PS4 now, but it was supposed to work with the PS3. Like,
right.
Like, they have a lot to prove that stuff is, and maybe, like, they won't prove it to me until it comes out and it's actually sitting in my living room and working, but, for me, I have a lot of doubt on Sony, like.
They have the momentum going in, though. I know for you
Sony
personally.
Sony does not have any sort of momentum.
You don't think they have momentum
When you are not, like, momentum comes from, like, actually having produced results, and Sony is not producing any results.
Well, I guess what he means is the word of mouth right now is slightly better from Sony.
It definitely
It's not momentum, though.
That's the word of mouth. You know?
Yeah, but I'm not even sure if that's, like, accurate, though, because, like, maybe it's just the people I associate with, but, like, I'm hearing people talk about the Xbox One, like, that aren't gamers and are, like, interested in it. They're interested in the TV shit. They're interested in the Kinect stuff. They're interested in it, and I'm not hearing any talk about the PS4. But that's
another issue too. That's like a calculated gamble. When they concentrate on TV, they wanted to embrace the bigger market.
Right.
They want to make sure they take a bigger space chunk of America. You know, and gamers freak out when they don't speak directly at them when it's a console that they are like very looking forward to. You know, because yeah. it's like being the little brother and your older brother just won't pick you at the team to be part of the dodgeball team. You know?
Like, I know that, like, my wife caught a news report on the Xbox One, and she's like, hey, that sounds pretty fucking cool. Like, she's like, I'm sure we're going to get one of those when they come out. Like,
you see, so it's a calculated risk. I think, again, that's why I think Microsoft has more to prove, because they need to show the gamers, like, there are games on this thing you are going to enjoy for this particular passion, you know?
See, that's where I'm like, I mean, maybe I just have faith that, like, there are going to be games there. I mean, I know that, Activision's going to support them. EA is going to support them. I mean, the side of that is, and I mean, Jeff's throwing this out, that, like, the indies aren't behind them. But, I mean, like, do indies sell consoles?
Right. Well, you also have to figure that a lot of Microsoft's success in this generation has come not from the indies, but from playing to that mainstream audience.
Right.
Like,
yeah, but they used to
be great. Have dominated the last 3 years so completely is not that they have supported indie gamers. It's not that they've, like, gone to some sort of hardcore gamers-first system. It's that they've embraced that larger audience and really, really played them really well. Things like the time Call of Duty content, where you're not playing to those hardcore gamers. You're playing to, like,
Not to mention the UFC streaming, ESPN integration,
right.
Things like that. They kind of just make it all that's. If that wasn't successful, they wouldn't take this approach now. You know,
right. I mean, it's like, I mean, there definitely is some messaging issues. Like, and Jeff has said that, like, he doesn't like the messaging. I think the messaging is just muddled at this point. Like, they're
I think there's no, in my opinion, like, this is kind of what I do for a living. I do messaging. I do somewhat marketing, and it's impossible to message anything that pleases everyone. All you can do is, like, aim at a particular audience and try and make it to the point where they can get information or buzzwords and walk away with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was for the gamer side. It was, like, less than satisfactory. It confused them. It left them with a lot of doubts. But when it came to, like, the mainstream media, like you just said, news picked up on it. Hey, it's gonna, hey, all your worries, you can just talk to it and get channels and start recording, and you can sit there after a long day's work and not even touch a controller anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was actually exactly what my wife said. She was like, this is the ultimate, like, step towards complete laziness for me. Like, I don't even need to get off the couch. I can just yell at the TV, and it will do what I want.
You see, I saw all of that, and I saw it play out. And at the same time, I'm thinking, this is going to piss off all the gamers.
I get to deal.
Because everyone was like, all the gamers were sitting in front of the computer or on Xbox and thinking, oh, man, they're going to talk directly to me. They're going to make me feel like the next generation is all about me. And then when it's like TV, yeah. Connect, they're like, motherfuckers.
Yeah. I mean, I get to deal with the gamers every day, and, like, a lot of them come in just like, I don't know about it.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's why Sony's kind of in a safer place, because they concentrate on and they mention other things here and there, you know?
I'm just wondering if Microsoft comes out at this thing and goes, we're going to show games, because that's what they promised at this point. If they come out and deliver that, and then Sony kind of has a lot of questions they have to answer. Like, they have to show the hardware, and they kind of have to, you know, show what this thing is actually going to be able to do, because
a lot of it is
conceptual.
Here's another thing too. People don't realize about these things. Even if something isn't addressed during that conference, they have a whole week to showcase it to world media, and most people pass judgment on that one hour, two hour thing. They settle the console wars based on that information.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, Monday night is going to be crazy.
When the reality of it all is, these conferences are, yes, to showcase games, yes, they do that. But in the bigger sense, for these corporations, they're putting investors at ease.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me that Microsoft is not doing their roundtable after. Like, I found that a really interesting news piece today. I was like, weird that they just canceled that. Like, it seems like they don't want questions.
There's a reason you book meetings at E3, because all the opportunities the roundtables do, you have one-on-one time to sit with somebody, play the game, and if and you come up with your own questions, you develop your own story right there on the floor by playing and sitting with a representative or, you know, in front of you. And then basically a good writer formulates his article or already goes in with a certain set list of questions, and he has one-on-one time uninterrupted, and he's not fighting to get his question answered in a giant room full of media members. You get me?
Yeah, yeah, but when they, exactly. I think when they do those round tables, they usually have like high up execs sitting there, and when you do like these meetings, it's usually people who don't seem to know much. They're just like, yeah, they'll pay me $10 an hour to talk about this game that I kind of briefed
about.
But
that's not the case when you go to E3, okay? That might be PAX. When you go to E3, usually when I book a meeting, I'm sitting down with the head creative director of for Skyrim. We sat down for a private meeting with him in his studio, and he's going walking through feature and telling you exactly what it took for them to get to this point, how they took the Oblivion engine and basically started from scratch. And then you're kind of, as a writer, you're kind of writing your own article in there and formulating your questions so that when he's done, you can speak to him on a certain angle. You get me?
Yeah.
That's why you want to make sure you book something. Now, if you just stand in line to see a demo, obviously you're just gonna get the PR person. You get me? There's levels that E3 people aren't exposed to, and no one really talks about. Cause it's not like a big story anyway. No one would really read, like, I don't know how fascinated people would be. Or maybe I'll do something like this for, you know, in my new role, I might just collect, like, the inside E3. You know, and show everyone really what it's really like to actually go out there and actually write, you know?
I'd be interested, like, for me, after that press conference, the reveal thing, Giant Bomb did an interview with one of the actual creative guys on the Xbox One team. They did it in, like, that one of their bunker things. Not yeah. Phil Harrison, not Don Matrick, not these executives that they carted out there, you know, to talk, but the guys that actually worked on the fucking system. And
yeah.
That was the best interview that I had heard the entire time. Like, the guy knew what he was talking about, he had answers, like, and then when they brought up stuff, like, it's like, we can't talk about that yet. Like, he knew what to say. And
he was on point.
Right.
Yeah.
But
and
like,
that's the kind of access you get at E3. And when they put the CEOs and media roundtables, they answer far less things. They're not hitting you with, you know. I think that's an overblown conclusion, you know, thing. That's just the thing gamers are concentrating on because they want to see a system fail in order for their choice, their fucking, you know, pick to be number one.
Right, which,
Jeff.
To me, it's just, I don't think Jeff wants the Xbox One to fail. Like, that mentality, though, it has never made any sense to me. It's like, because then they sit there and criticize any sort of exclusivity. Like, oh, EA has destroyed football games because they have an exclusive contract with the NFL. But that, yeah. I mean, there's no competition there.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, if Microsoft is to bow out, like, where is Sony going to get any pressure from them? Or, like,
I think
if Sony bows out, where is Microsoft going to get pressure?
I get a lot of sense where everyone wants to be considered themselves an expert, too. They all want to be the patchers of the internet. And they want to say, like, I called it. I called it.
Right.
You know, like, I wish Jeff was available right now. How many times has he's been on the internet? And he's like, I called it. I was right. Just so you all know, I was right.
He does like to say he's right.
He does.
Yeah.
All right.
It happened very often, so he needs to
say
that.
I'm gonna skip a lot of the questions Earl sent, but will the last
Guardian? I think Jeff has some Twitter ones too. We had to go.
Yeah. Will the last Guardian Final Fantasy versus 13 be on display?
No.
You won't see either one.
I think versus 13 is now 15.
If it is, you want to follow my feed because I'm gonna sit there and vine about 2 hours of it. Because that's probably as close as I'm gonna get for a while. I'm just gonna be there just staring at it. You know, I'll be like, are you going to make me cry when this game comes out in 10 years?
Oh,
Thank you for the trailer with no gameplay behind it. Thank you.
What third parties do you expect to see at Sony's press conference and at Microsoft's?
The same ones that share each other's content. Activision, Harmonix,
EA,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. You'll see Square and Capcom.
I think this is the return of the music games, by the way.
Oh, no. No.
It's not sad.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of excited for that Fantasia game.
Hey,
it looks
listen.
Pretty cool.
I'm not gonna say, you know, about insane information or anything, but with two systems with incorporated cameras, they can stream online. You know, you can have, you know, battle royales against another band doing air guitars across the country.
tell me
no one right now is thinking like, man, if I have a couple beers, I can totally get into a Van Halen solo. You know?
It's true. All right, Jeff, what do we got? What kind of questions did you get? Just quickly,
I only have a couple, so.
Okay.
Great, because I'm about to fall asleep. So.
Can I throw something out real quick? Going back to like how impressed you guys were with the TV functionality, though, before we start the questions.
What did we say that we were?
I never said I was impressed.
You guys
Stop putting words in our mouth.
No, no, no. You guys are talking about how like.
I said it makes sense that that's the direction they went through.
Yeah, and like how that's like a.
On
like,
the marketing, you know, on a marketing standpoint, it makes sense. To speak to the larger crowd before E3 came out, which basically alienates them from mainstream media by just concentrating on gamers.
Yeah, and like Chris brought up the example of his wife being like, oh, those things are pretty cool, right?
Right.
I think about when I go to over my dad's house once in a while and we want to watch a movie or something, and like turning on the TV is a production at that house where it's like, you know, we get the TV on, but you can't get the right input. Like, there's six different remotes. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. You get the sound not coming out because you have to somehow switch the right input on the speakers. And I think about how they would see that and go, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. But they would never buy it because the reason they don't know how to turn on their TV is because they don't fucking watch TV. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay, so
I think a
your
lot
particular
of
family is
TV.
Not the demographic you're speaking to, but I'm sure there's that's millions like, of other Americans
does your dad
who
watch
will be
football?
Like, who will want to come home and be like, Xbox on, play Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but that's like the one show that they watch, and then they'll watch it upstairs because it's so much easier for them to turn on TV upstairs.
That's
like,
the beauty of that's the beauty of video on demand, man.
It's just these people that don't care about games.
The nuclear family no longer sits down as a whole and watches hours and hours of network TV. That's been proven.
True.
They watch it at their leisure. They watch it whenever they want. Marathoning TV shows is a real thing. You know, the reason Breaking Bad, you know, found success is because people find it on Netflix and they streamed it. They watch it on the marathon. So, like, the whole argument that it's not a traditional TV experience, don't you like it? No, it's not. It's directed more at the new trend where people watch everything online. More and more people don't have a cable box anymore. They just pay for, you know, they watch everything online.
Yeah, and all that stuff. I kind of embrace it, and I think it's cool. I'll be happy to cut out my cable soon. But it's just, I think that, like, all that stuff is cool, and people are going to like it, but you're not going to get your average, like, middle-aged person who doesn't play games to buy it because, oh, it makes their TV easier. I think they just don't care enough.
And those are the same people who don't have an iPad, and those are the same people who don't have an Xbox in the first place. So they're not they're not losing out on a sale here. You know, they're not losing a customer who's walking away.
They're targeting those people that do have an iPad, that do have an iPhone, like, you know, that are technologically savvy but maybe aren't playing games. Like, if they bought an Xbox or a PS3, they're using it to get Netflix or to use it as a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah. Jeff.
All right, questions. Adrian asks, on a scale of 9 to 10, how handsome and charming is Walter?
0.9.
I'm going to give you a 9. I don't want it to go to your head, goddammit.
Yeah, I mean, we can't let him... 0.9. Can't let you get too big of a head, so we'll get a 9.5.
I'm actually... You guys know me pretty... Jesus Christ. You guys know me pretty well. I'm not... I won't let any of the stuff, like, go to my head.
Right.
And, you know, I laugh at myself more than anything else. People give me compliments. I'm like, all right, cool, yeah, nice. You know, I don't let any of this stuff in. I think that's going to show in my new job, which I'm just going to head and fucking say it. So I'm going to E3. The company sponsoring me is CBS Interactive. I flew over to San Francisco to kind of interview, and I'm taking over the position of overseeing their social and community for all the sites under the CBS Interactive umbrella. So that includes GameSpot, Giant Bomb, Comic Vine, GameFAQ. I'm going to be working with their overseas team in one nature or another. So it's like, it's a significant, I guess, if you look at what I did for IGM, it's a significant promotion. It's a much bigger role. And like, so, like, if you guys like follow me at IGN and you saw some of the stuff I was doing for the community and all that stuff, it's like, think of that on like a much larger scale now, you know? And it's kind of scary and it's kind of fucking cool too, you know?
Right.
And, so like, stuff like that, you guys know I'm like humbled. I much rather just fucking concentrate on work than be like, look at me, I'm on internet, or, you know, I'm internet famous. None of that shit really affects me. So, there it is.
Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks. Nice job.
And good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah. With that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you'll be handling quite a bit this coming week then.
I actually have E3, then I come back to Florida to finalize everything before I move back to San Francisco permanently. So, you know, stress free.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Just don't worry about it.
It's really quick.
No. No.
Yeah, you want to continue on there, Jeff?
Yeah, I only have like one or two more questions. Another one from Adrian. He says, seriously though, favorite E3 memory, even if you never went?
I was walking one of the last days at E3 2 years ago. I was walking through the place usually gets a little emptier in the last days. Miyamoto was walking. He's surrounded by all his handlers. And I'm like, you know, you're tired to a point. And you're like, that's cool. I haven't really talked to him. Let me see. Let me go by and just say hi. And I'm like, hey, you enjoying the show? And he just smiles. He goes, oh, yes, yes, very nice. And I high-fived him. And everyone around him looked absolutely horrified. And he just had one of his, you know, signature smiles. And he said, okay. And he kept walking, you know?
That's great.
And the one guy, one of the last translators trailing him, just looked back to me. And I could tell he was desperately trying to read what site I was working for so I can be permanently banned from any kind of Nintendo coverage. You know? And I just kind of like, I flipped it so he couldn't read it. And just walked away, you know? And that was like my favorite memory at all, just making all these like corporate handlers flip the hell out.
And high-fiving Miyamoto, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's a normal dude, you know?
And a legend on top of that, so it's pretty, I mean...
He's a great guy. You can tell, yeah. You can tell he still he loves video games, you know? And he just, I don't know. You can just sense that off him when he's not on stage. You can just kind of tell he's just happy to be there, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool. I don't think any of us will be able to top that.
No, I mean, well, most of our experience is just kind of like sitting at home and watching the press conferences or
honestly, I miss those days. I miss being on AIM and with everyone and we're watching at the same time and just like going back. Now it's Twitter and going back and forth and like everyone's have a smart ass concept here or there and you know? Every once in a while, we do get generally surprised, and everyone flips out. Oh my god! You know,
this is the sixth consecutive year my company's annual meeting has been on the same day as E3. So, I'll enjoy missing it once again and trying to read about it later.
Well, I requested the day off, and I have it off, so I'll be sure to tweet your ass all day to tell you how much fun we're having.
Yeah. I mean, I won't be able to read my Twitter feed.
Well, you'll just have a whole bunch of ads.
I'm actually traveling that day in Los Angeles. So I'm hoping I make it before 5:30 so I can sit down and watch the conferences.
Shit's going to blow up.
It's at 5:30, right, Pacific, then it starts?
I think the Sony one might be later in the day. I know the Microsoft one I thought was early.
Microsoft one's early.
Okay.
It's in the morning.
Yeah, I'm definitely missing Microsoft. I'll catch one of them. I mean, I'm not really concerned about the conferences. I'm literally, the next day, I'm literally on the floor.
Right, yes. Yeah. It's like, the conferences are fun for us at home because that's where you get, like, your giant information dump right from the platform holders. Yeah. The rest of it is kind of like, you gotta wait for that information to trickle out. So,
yeah.
Like, somebody needs to go play the game and then write it up and send it out. And, like, honestly, like, I get more out of watching trailers all like, after they announce a game, just watching the trailer, than sitting around waiting for somebody to tell me, like, what they thought of a game.
Well,
they played for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
My perspective has changed from enjoying the conferences as a community to now, usually, like, I've worked for IGN and now I'm working for, you know, another, you know, big company in the industry. So they both host live stream shows and literally all the big games come to you.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
not
even
like. You
don't
have to go anywhere.
I literally just sit there and I chat the guys up and the creative directors and, you know, head of like studios and stuff and in between, like, you know, all you guys on in like 20 minutes and we have a conversation and talk about the game and they have the demo running beforehand just to make sure they're not surprised and live in the air, you know?
That's where I get a lot of my information from E3. Like, Giant Bomb runs a 3-hour show each, from Monday to Thursday. And, like, I just listen to that all week long. So it's, like, basically an information dump. And, like, they get in, they talk with a lot of the developers. And
you talk to the developers, that's, like, their favorite part. They don't want to stand there at booths. They like having the more intimate like interaction and seeing you how you know the game press receives the game. And I really really enjoy handing out the awards because like nothing like having these guys stand there and deal with like hordes of crowds coming at them and then you just walk over and you just kind of hold up a badge that you're a nominee and they flip out every single time, you know. Because it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, the investment was worth it, the stress was worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Any other favorite memories, though?
I remember sitting down, I don't think I was watching it with any of you guys, but that Ubisoft conference from 3 years ago with the laser tag.
Oh, that was horrible.
It was so funny.
What was the one guy, the super weird guy that did the Ubisoft one a couple years ago? Is that the same one?
That might have been with the Mr. Caffeine. Was that
Mr. Caffeine?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, my God. That was the worst.
That was pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's so funny.
I was at the E3. We were in the war room going, like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, that was, like, it was just dumbfounding. Like they put this guy up to this, and he went out there and did it, and it made no goddamn sense. And then they bring out that laser tag thing, and it's not a video game. It's a fucking laser tag.
Yeah. I don't even remember that part.
Oh, the laser tag thing was great. Like, they played laser tag on the stage. They were running around the
stage
shooting at each other.
It was weirdest thing. It was very odd, for sure.
I think my favorite might be when Sony brought their otherwise pretty good show to a grinding halt with Wonderbook. Yeah. It was 10 minutes or though of just utter awkwardness. We're just like, and then like Twitter exploded. That was fun.
That was the GDC though.
No, Wonder Woman was E3 last year.
It was they spent 20 minutes on it.
Yeah,
they had a two-hour press conference. They spent 20 minutes on Wonder Book, and it was like,
see, that's
what is
why.
Going on?
That's why I'm gonna raise my hand when they're like, "Hey, who wants to go to the conference?" And I'm like, "Meh."
Yeah, like I'll skip it.
I just remember everyone losing their shit during that. Like, and I was among them. I'm like, "What is this? Why are you doing this to me?"
I honestly had like in my roles in the industry, I have more fun like manning like Twitter and social media because it's just fucking you laugh so hard sometimes.
It has to be hysterical just reading the shit coming through.
Yeah.
What is going on? And I remember. With that Wonder Book thing specifically, Brian placed a bet with you that was going to be the biggest thing last year.
It was going to sell gangbusters, and I'm like, Brian, it's not even going to break 100,000. I don't think it even came close to that. So I was right for once. It happens once in a while.
So did Brian give you whatever he owed
you? He did not give me credit for being right. He's like, oh, it would have been good, but they didn't market it. I'm like, well, no, it would not. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
He did say that if we ever make it out to PAX Prime, he will buy us beer.
Oh, really?
But I owe so many beers to Sean that I don't know if that's a good deal.
I'm telling you right now, anyone listening, PAX Prime, if you're going, you want to keep an eye for a GameSpot party, because I'm going to make that shit huge.
Nice.
Period. I don't care what it takes. That's one of the main things I want to do when I go to these conventions. I'm going to make, like, our parties to be the fucking place to be. So just,
did we ever announce what you
you were changing a diaper.
You're changing a diaper.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Walter is in charge of everything at CBSI.
Right, he's in charge of CBS. Yes. He'll be on the evening news from now on.
No,
yes. Him and Lorne Michaels.
Yes. just a gaming site.
You're going to be the voice of a generation, Walter.
Enjoy. That's horrible.
He is now the evening news anchor.
I'm sorry in advance for anyone in the Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard.
Way to start that off. Jeff, you got anything else?
If I'm being serious, my probably favorite E3 memory is, I think it was 2007, Nintendo just rocked the house, dude. It was like, here's Mario Galaxy, here's Metroid Prime, like, there's so many games coming out. I remember just being like, there's like fucking 7 or 8 games for the Wii that were, like, worth getting excited over.
And that lasted for the generation on the Wii.
That was pretty much, like, that was it. They had, like, a big year there, and then after that, it was, yeah, nothing.
There was their, the year they had their Skyward Sword demo that didn't work.
It goes to be expected, though, with the system, though, you know?
Yeah, we're working off of IR. And...
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
That, I mean, that game did end up having great motion controls, but...
When you go to these conferences, your phone barely works. You know?
Yeah, it's too much going on.
So much interference and everything.
Yeah. But I think... Tony, did you have a favorite E3 memory?
But my favorite memory was not being able to go to watch any of these.
Or
E3.
To see any of them, yeah, okay. one last question from Gigawatt Conduit. He says, Ridge Racer or Half-Life 3, which should be the final reveal?
Neither.
Yeah, it's my
favorite. Why do we need Half-Life 3? I don't understand everyone's obsession.
People like that game. I don't like it, personally. I played a lot of Half-Life 2, and I thought it was overrated a little bit.
Even if you like it, though, I mean, there's like 9 million games. Why are you fixating on one that hasn't been announced ever?
That's why.
Because it's Valve. Whether you like it or not, Valve means quality when it comes to games, man.
Yeah, but they, like, we've gone through this.
They make hats now. They don't make games.
Yeah, they don't have to make games anymore. They really don't.
They make cards now, too. I want to get into that beta. The card beta. It's so good.
The trading cards?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a bunch of those.
I got to get into that. It's crazy. You play stupid games, get cards.
Yeah,
it's like the next evolution of achievements.
I hope not. I'm happy with just achievement points and trophies. That's more enough for me.
Do you guys think there will be Ridge Racer at E3?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
No,
I don't think Half-Life 3. Well, Valve doesn't go to E3 for the most part, right?
Unless they announce a partnership.
Right. So, unless they've announced a partnership with Sony, I doubt it.
I think the ultimate reveal is still Conquer 2. Everything hinges on Conquer 2 for me.
That would be surprising.
If
the success of a conference was like based on Conquer 2 being announced, that's a shitty ass conference.
Amen.
Whatever. I'll tell you this. If they announce it, I will buy Xbox One. If they don't, I probably am waiting on both the systems. So
you're buying them regardless.
Nah, I don't have the money.
Regardless.
Not this one anyways.
You're going to see enough people on the feed posting pictures of them holding the new one. You're going to be like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Maybe come tax season next year.
I'm really hoping they hit Michael Packer's price points.
That would be nice. 400 and 350?
I can deal with that.
I think that makes sense for me. I think that's
I almost I have 350 put away already for my new console.
I hate to discredit him there, but that's fucking insane. What? 350 and 4?
Well, 4 isn't that far off from the initial Xbox's price point. So.
Well, remember, they're not trying to pack in some brand new processing technology or you know, brand new GPU tech. No.
I mean, they basically built supercomputers.
That's it.
Yeah, you have to also remember, Jeff, that the technology.
Not even the supercomputers. They built a like off the shelf desktop with extra RAM.
Right. That's the technology that made the Xbox what it is, and the PS3. It's all like more than a decade old now. Like to build something that far supersedes that, you can still do with technology that's been around for, you know, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like,
I mean, if you really want to
did that, right? I mean, they didn't far exceed it, but
right.
They basically released like a box that is the same, like.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it's like an Xbox.
And by all counts, that's fucking overpriced. Like, and that's where
I think they learned their lesson. They waited too long to see it become profitable, and this time they don't want to see that. They wanted to make sure it was something extremely powerful, something that was going to last at least 5 years, and that they can start seeing profits much faster.
What worries me about that price point for a Sony,
I don't buy that.
Well, is like, I mean, the rumor is that they're not going to include the PlayStation Eye and that stuff in there. So, they're basically throwing Move out to die again.
Yeah. Dude. Like, I will give Microsoft credit for this. Like, Kinect's gonna come in the box. If you want part of your system, like, to be one of these tangential things, put it in the box. Don't separately.
I mean, I never bought Kinect, but you know, I was kind of interested.
But now you'll have it. Like,
now I'll have it. Right?
You're gonna get it no matter what. If you buy it, you're gonna need it. Like,
and that's the thing. Like Move, you know, Move sounds interesting, but I'm not gonna spend $120 to put it in my house. Like,
did any of you guys own Move?
No, you did.
It was really good tech. It really was. Like, I think it's better than the Kinect, but it didn't take off.
Well, because it was like an extra $100, and it was like five different pieces that you needed, and.
But it was like the Wii tech, but like way more advanced. You know, and it worked how you would expect, like how you would want it to work. You know.
You know what my best experience with the Move was? This Move event in San Francisco where I got to talk to the Machete himself. The dude from the Hobo with a Shotgun. I forgot his name.
Machete?
Yeah.
Good actor. What's his name? Chris?
I'm spacing, dude.
Yeah, now I've just...
It's kind of late in the East
Coast. I can't believe I can't.
And I know who he is, so I can picture his craggly old face. And
Yeah,
from Dusk to Dawn and all that stuff.
Good actor, too. He's done some, you know, smaller roles and can act, but I can't think of his fucking name.
I got it. Danny Trejo.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was there, and I got to talk to him a little bit and stuff, and we spoke Spanish, and everyone in the room seemed confused. It was great.
I bet you that guy's a really cool dude.
He was just happy to be there. He's like, oh, people want to take pictures with me? Okay. Yeah. That was my best experience with the Move.
My best experience was Sports Champions Bocce Ball. Such a fun game. But, yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's I want to see that in a box. Bocce Ball is such a fun game.
All right. Well, I got one other thing in our Twitter feed. It's a prediction from Brian. He predicts Nintendo will come out as the winner in quotes of E3, because really there's no fucking winner, but everyone needs to declare one, right?
Yeah. By the end of Monday, people are going to be like, Microsoft won, Sony won,
yeah,
Nintendo won. And it's going to be one delusional individual who's going to say that Onya won, that stupid startup. So
And not as a troll either. He's serious. Like,
he's seriously sitting at home going like, this one.
Yeah, have a presence at E3.
Did, yeah.
You know?
Outside in the parking lot.
Wow.
I'm sure they're going to give him away like they did that fucking On Live.
Oh yeah.
2 years ago, it was basically go to the booth and you walk away with a free freaking online console.
You know, it's about the only way it had gotten one too, is if somebody gave it for free.
They did it at PAX too. I'm sure that's gonna be the case. Which is fine. If I do get one, if you're on my Twitter feed and you see me take a picture of it, ask me and I'll give it to you.
Sweet.
I see the game stick taking off better than the Ouya, honestly. And even that, I don't have high hopes for.
I'm hoping the guys who did the new Neo Geo HD system are
that
there.
Thing has been, that, dude, that thing has been as a reservable item for like 2 years now. Like, this thing is not real. It can't be real.
I want to see if they're there, even in a small corner, just so I can be like, wow, you like, crazy fucks made this.
You made a handheld that has Neo Geo games on it. Congrats.
And it has a cradle where I can connect it HD. You guys did this. You crafty devils. You know?
Brian also says the Wii U will still tank despite Nintendo winning E3.
I think he's kind of onto something with them coming out looking good, but I honestly think Wii U is going to pick up this phone a little bit. I think you're going to see, it's not going to dominate sales. I think it's going to start to bounce.
At this point, any game announcement is a positive thing. Because yes, right now, press has just been people distancing themselves from it. So his perspective, yes, they won. Just the fact that they're going to be at E3 and they're going to talk about Mario and Smash Brothers, they won.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to throw this out there before we end. I don't know if you guys saw, it was leaked to that all the white Wii U's are being recalled.
Yeah.
Nintendo's taking them back. I will confirm, I'm not going to say much more on the show, but yeah, that's true. That's totally true.
Yeah.
I don't know I do not know exactly what Nintendo, like, what the story is behind that, but they are, you will not see white Wii U's soon in retailers.
I wonder if they're just going to be repurposed as a...
with a bigger hard drive and a bundle. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're releasing Mario Kart with a white Wii U, mm-hmm. white Wii U Deluxe, like, whatever.
Yep.
I don't think we see a price drop, though.
I think
they say 350, and that's, like, if the PS4 comes out at 350, and the Wii U's 350, that's scary.
Sorry, Nintendo.
Wait, I think you guys are, like, dreaming if you think that that's going to be 350 for
I think the Wii's going to get a price drop.
Yeah,
possibly. I think the 360 gets a price drop.
I think PlayStation 3 is going to see a price drop as well.
No, they're all going to have $50 price drops.
I'm pretty sure the Vita is going to set one for one too. There's going to be a lot of there's going to be a market shift so that whatever price they announce the PlayStation 4, it still seems like a significant value or everything else is prior.
I think you see a $50 price drop on all those, but I don't see PS4 or 3 or Xbox One being less than $5. Like I have a hard time believing it. If it's true, that's really cool. Like, but
I think you want it to be less than $5 because that means you, as a retail, you know, space seller, that means you can attach more crap to the sale.
Yeah, but I just
I didn't mean crap. You know what I mean?
Well,
stuff,
yeah.
Things, items,
games,
items, controllers, points, cards,
headset,
strategy guides to how to connect it to your TV. You know. Whatever you guys are selling.
That's the big question I got. Jeff just said it. Headsets. I need a headset for both these fucking things.
I want
it.
Especially
want
my
in
Sony console.
It's gonna be pack-in. It's gonna be a pack-in.
Give me a cheap one in the box. I don't care.
It's a pack-in.
You know, the Microsoft one is shit, but like,
you know what? I'd love to see, like, Sony just kinda like, go ape shit and pack in a Bluetooth one.
Right, like a really nice, or like a nice, you know,
remember the one they released for the PlayStation 3, the black slick one? That was a really good one.
Yeah, I know
the one that came with SOCOM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the one they released with Warhawk sucked.
No, the one that came with SOCOM was a really nice piece of equipment.
Yeah. It actually said it was like actually Sony PlayStation 3 branded. The one they released with Warhawk was like a Jabra, and I could never get it to work.
Yeah.
I still don't have a headset for my PS3 at all. No.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, you use on your computer, it'll work in the PlayStation.
Yeah.
I think that the thing about the Xbox was it came with that damn cheap one, but
yeah,
then you started
does.
Using it, and that made you feel like you needed, like, a better one.
Oh, because those things broke notoriously. They still do. Like, they just break.
But since you had the experience of having a headset, you're like, oh, I don't have a headset now. Now I really need one.
I just think,
like, established.
Speaking of headsets, I'm curious to see Astro's, like, next gen headsets. Because I've been using Astro for this current generation. I want to see what's next for them, you know?
Well, you might get a chance next week.
I'm hoping they're there. It's either them or Razer is going to have a solution, I imagine.
I just, even if it's a cheap one that will break, I'm happy to have that out of the box.
It's going to be in the box.
There should be something.
There's no question. It's going to be in the box, you know?
It should be wireless, too. It really should.
Yeah. It's a Bluetooth. I think Bluetooth headsets are not out of the norm. They should be
like
cheap.
Those are so cheap. They're so cheap, dude. It doesn't cost them anything to make those.
I like my wireless 360 headset. It's great.
What do you got? Like a Turtle Beach?
The Triton Warhead.
Okay.
It's really nice.
I got an X12, and it's pretty nice, but lots of wires.
Yeah, no wires on mine.
I got a bedtime creeping up.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Let's conclude.
Well, thanks for coming on, Walter.
Oh, yeah, dude. Nothing changes, man. I'm just going to be a little bit more busy when I go over there. But I'll come on every once in a while and, like, troll with Jeff.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on after you settle down a bit. I know it's going to be a busy year because it's console
releases. The thing is, I'm taking a job in the middle of, like, convention season.
Right.
So I have to find an apartment and get settled in a new city and move. In the middle of all of that.
Right.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
So it's probably going to be like, I found an apartment. I can't really
shopping
for a bed until I come back from Comic-Con.
You're going to have boxes in your apartment until, like, the fall.
probably, honestly, till like, the Christmas break.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to be in the office for, like, a week straight. So that's probably when I'm going to be, like, unpacking and stuff and be like, yeah.
You're going to have a mattress, a couch, and a TV set up pretty much till the end of the year.
And that's still better than what I had in the Army for most of my deployment. So you don't see me complaining, you know? Unlike the Navy. Nah, fuck, I shouldn't do that.
They bring their beds wherever they go.
I'm jealous.
Their beds float.
That's right.
They share, though. It's like a timeshare.
Fuck.
All right.
I'm sorry anyone's in the Navy. I'm really
not. You're not sorry.
I am.
You're not. If you were actually sorry, you'd stop. You're not sorry.
No, because they're right now, they're probably saying something back at the meet saying stuff because they're in the Navy. They have a comeback for the Army, guys.
It's true.
It's a jive. That's how it goes.
All right. Well, we will we'll catch you next week. We'll have some E3 stuff.
Oh, it's going to be magical.
You guys recorded at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have like all the E3 shit. Yeah.
Alright. Look, I can't make any promises, but I'm gonna have my phone with me and I can do Skype. So if you give me a heads up and there's like a window, I'll jump on for like 10 minutes or something.
Alright.
Alright.
Yep.
Give me some on the floor reporting.
That would be great.
I'm probably gonna sound like shit. I'm gonna be jet lagged and tired. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, I bet. You're gonna get there, you're gonna be running around for 2 days, and you're gonna be like, oh, I'm so tired.
What's great is that the convention floor isn't open to Tuesday, so I got Monday to just kinda settle in a bit before the hectic stuff starts. And then, yeah.
So we'll enjoy your trip next week, and we're gonna enjoy the craziness that is E3, and Jeff and I will, at least. We're both off on Monday, and Tony will not catch E3.
I think I'll be working a 16-hour day that day, so.
Yikes.
Tony will be very tired when he comes on the show next week.
I will.
Chris, we'll get a Skype going, I think, during the show. At least you and I, and maybe a couple others like Fozzie and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need too many people because then it turns into mayhem.
Yeah, you can't hear the show. You can't hear anything.
Yeah.
I think that the best was when me, you, Walter, and Fozzie watched the Sony one. I think that was a nice size.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we will catch you all next week.
Sounds good.
Say goodbye, Jeff.
Goodbye, Jeff.